You're listening to Economics of Place, part of the We Love Where You Live podcast series brought to you by the Michigan Municipal League. Here's your host, Dan Gilmartin.
When someone spends over 40 years at an organization and spends over 40 years in a profession and does so with great distinction, like Bill Mathewson, then before they get out the door, you got to sit down and talk with them. Pick their brains a little bit about what government is like today versus what it was like 40 years ago. Bill spent an amazing amount of time working on behalf of cities and village governments around the state of Michigan at the local level, the state level, the federal level, and in the courts. He spent the last 20 years or so working primarily in the courts as a general counsel of the league. We're going to talk with Bill today about his impressions of what government is like today versus maybe how it was in the late 1970s. What's changed for the better? What's changed for the worst? Some of the colorful characters he's encountered along the way and some of the issues that he really believes we should be thinking about working on here today if we're going to make our communities great and our state great. So stick around. It's a very interesting phone call or conversation here with Bill, and you're going to enjoy it. So have at it. Okay, I'm now sitting here on July 2nd with Bill Mathewson, the former general counsel of the league, until yesterday, I think, officially. And as I said in the intro, I wanted to get a chance to sit down and talk with a guy who's been doing some amazing work for over 40 years now. First of all, congratulations on your retirement.
Thank you, Dan.
Great. Now tell us, you came to work at the league first as an intern, then as a full-time employee in the late 1970s. How was it a different place, not the league itself, but in terms of where Michigan was in the late 1970s compared to today?
I guess what's striking is some of the leadership in Lansing, frankly. Now that was an era that I recall, you know, being sort of a Bill Milliken style, or maybe even a Jim Blanchard style, but certainly term limits had not kicked in Lansing, and there were persons in Lansing, legislators in Lansing, who had decades of experience, and staff persons who supported them and had tremendous institutional knowledge. And while I don't work in the Lansing scene anymore, I did for 10 years, and at that point in time, there certainly was. There were a lot of people who had a good sense on Michigan's finances and where the state was going in a real unified sort of a way, or comprehensive sort of a way. And I don't know at this point, but my guess is that a lot of that institutional knowledge is gone, and I think that is leading to a situation in Lansing that is not helpful for the state.
Yeah. It was also one of the things that I think about from back in those days, and I obviously wasn't there at that point, but legislators, there was a camaraderie amongst them. I mean, they would oftentimes spend the majority of their time in Lansing. They would live with one another, eat with one another, work with one another, and develop relationships, and compromise was maybe a little bit easier to come to, and now we don't see any of that. We see folks, you know, driving in from wherever on Tuesday and driving back on Thursday, not sharing anything with anybody else, and 6 years later, you got a new crew coming in, and everybody's sort of in a different spot. Is that an accurate reflection of sort of this familiarity that doesn't exist anymore? Was it there? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Or that's that's certainly my sense of it. And when I worked in the Lansing office, I remember the not tremendously nice bar that a lot of us hung out at and had pizza, and you know, some of the legislators would be there as well. There was another bar downtown where a lot of them would hang out. So you're right, there were friendships, at least there seemed to be genuine friendships, and it makes sense if you anticipate having to work with someone for a long period of time, you want to make sure that you get along with them, whether you are inclined to or not. With term limits, there's probably no expectation that you're really going to work with them for a long time. So you're more free to pursue your own agenda and not worry about being collaborative. At least that's my sense of things.
Yeah, and I think about that too. Is, you know, now obviously there's so much partisan rancor in Lansing, in D.C., in newspapers, you name it, and you think, oh, it's worse than it's ever been, and then you look back at some of the times throughout history and you start reading different things about where folks were, and there was certainly partisanship all along, but this this rancor probably wasn't there on an ongoing basis the way that it is now. And the other thing is, you know, politics is, as we know, sort of the art of compromise. That's what it is by its very nature, a democratic society. And folks come in now have already signed up not to compromise on both sides of the aisle. So they get in trouble when they do compromise to try to get something done. And then the public gets mad at them when they try to compromise. And it's a kind of a vicious circle.
And you'll recall that way back when Coleman Young was mayor of Detroit, in the early years when I think he was really doing quite a good job for the city of Detroit, you know, he was cutting deals with Governor Milliken at the time. And I'm sure Governor Milliken took some criticism for that, but I think they were both reaching out and trying to do the best thing for both the state and the city of Detroit. And Coleman was certainly a character. He used to hold a reception that would follow the Municipal League's reception at the annual legislative conference. He would come up a little bit later and had his own room, and that was the party to be at, actually. Ours was nice, yes. But Coleman's was much nicer. And it was fun. A lot of legislators there, obviously, and it was quite a scene, and it was neat.
You bring up Coleman Young. Ever worked directly with him on issues as they related specifically to Detroit, or was he an engaged member of this organization?
His lobbyist certainly was. She was certainly engaged, and Coleman did what he needed to do in terms of putting in personal appearances and being there.
Yeah. So, you know, fast forward a little bit. Are there things now that you know? We talked about the rancor and the angst with respect to partisanship. Are there issues now that maybe are different than you saw when you first came to work here? Are they sort of just graduated into new things, or is it the same kind of stuff? I mean, obviously we still need money and we're still arguing about who does what and where, when and why and how and all that stuff. But anything new on the horizon that would surprise folks?
Well, sadly, I'm afraid we're seeing reruns. Yeah. It's a question of...
It's like Hollywood, right? Just new actors in the same script, right?
Pretty much. And
better technical stuff.
And as you know, sequels often aren't as good as the original.
Not so good.
And I'm afraid that may be
Although Police Academy 7 was a fine piece of a cinema.
You know, that is a standout, right. Certainly. No, I'm afraid it's a lot of the same stuff.
They could only make 3 Godfathers. How could they make 7 Police Academies? How's that possible?
Quality of, okay. of the base material.
Okay.
anyway, the funding for municipalities was an issue back then. The tendency for the state to in one way or another remove funding from local units was an issue back then. It's an issue, obviously, today. Transit was an issue back then. Mm-hmm. It's an issue in metropolitan Detroit, at least today. Mm-hmm. I don't think we've figured that out. Road funding, you know, maybe was in better shape back then than it is now. I'm not sure that the core issues have changed as much as you might anticipate. I suppose right. The environmental scene is much different. There's much more focus on that, I think, than perhaps there was before.
How about the local official? You know, people think of mayors, and, you know, we mentioned Coleman Young, and, you know, we only have 12 full-time mayors in the state of Michigan, and, you know, the vast majority, over 3,000 local elected officials, are doing it for, you know, $10 a meeting or $1 a year or $500 to cover their travel or something simple. They're doing it because they love their communities, and they're never going to run for anything else. Is that core group of people the same they were 30, 40 years ago, or is it a different type of person that's sitting in city councils and village presidencies and mayorships around these small towns around Michigan?
Well, I'm certainly not anywhere near impartial, but I think the record of local elected officials in Michigan continues to be pretty exemplary. As you indicate, they're not making money doing this. They're if anything, it's a much, much tougher job than it was when I started. They are are scrutinized, I think, in the media and social media and elsewhere. And I think a lot of folks feel that there is a level of accessibility to them now that there wouldn't have been before. So I think it's a tougher job, and I think they're doing well considering. Just in general, I think they're doing well. And they certainly outshine our folks in our state capital, in my opinion. I think that I don't know that the persons have changed. I mean, there are some local elected officials, I'm sure, that have or come into office with fairly narrow agendas and then realize that once they're on a city or village council, that they're dealing with a great many things and they can't just pursue the one item they came in on. But I think by and large, they are trying to do an amazing job for not a lot of money, if any, and with reduced resources. So I think they're really, really admirable in what they're doing.
Yeah,
and you mentioned that there aren't that many full-time mayors, and you're correct, of course, but I have the sense that the position of mayor has changed over time. I think it's a reflection of the media that increasingly needs to have a person or a clearly cut point of view to tell the public about. And I think the mayor's position is the position that is most easily fits with that. And so I think the mayor's position is becoming more visible and more, and I think the public media is focusing more on that position. And there's been some reflection of that in charters and city charters. So it's,
for sure. So we've talked a little bit about the locals and the state. You've also done a ton of work, both as an advocate and as general counsel at the federal level, working on federal court cases and working with federal legislative efforts at different points in time. When I think about Michigan in the federal government, boy, we've lost a lot of horsepower in the last few years with some retirements, guys like John Dingell and Dale Kildee and Carl Levin and others. They come to mind, but there are several others too. The long-standing folks, John Conyers, high-ranking members of committees, and all of a sudden we find ourselves now with a largely much less experienced group of folks, and they're turning over a lot. They're not there for 30 and 40 years like they used to be. Was it different, you know, going to bat for communities in Michigan maybe in 1980 or 1990 as it is now with those types of things, with those types of individuals who were there and now aren't there anymore?
Well, as you point out, the Michigan delegation certainly had more power, has had more power at various times.
We shrunk too, right? We lost a few seats and
right.
spots.
That happens. and you know, Sandy Levin's retiring,
Sandy
right?
Sandy Levin, yeah. There's other. I mean,
So that sort of transition
is one of the few long-standing folks still hanging around.
Yeah.
Right.
So that sort of transition is, you know, can't help Michigan in terms of, regardless of which party is in power, because we're losing that sort of clout. So we used to have ranking members on a bunch of committees, I think, and with those retirements, it's going to take a while to get those back. You know, I didn't do a great deal of federal lobbying, but certainly when we went down there, if you had an agenda, when you had Carl Levin and various other persons listening and paying attention, it made a difference. I mean, they controlled a lot of what went on.
So certainly. How about some of those colorful characters that you've come across? We hear all sorts of stories of folks at all different types of, in government, around government through the decades, that folks that maybe played a big role in things that others may not know about.
Well, I already mentioned Coleman Young. I mean, obviously he was a person who people would have very differing views about. Some would would think he was not helpful at all, and some would think that he was great. But whatever else he was, he at least in the early years of his mayoral term, he was very bright, very very involved, and he was a character. He was pretty amazing. There've been some amazing people. The Charlie Smiley, the former mayor of Burton, Michigan, and then who became a legislator. Charlie was, in my experience, was a terrific person in terms of the way he would try to.
Still is, by the way.
And still is. Well, when he was mayor.
Right.
Mayor of Burton. Yeah, it seemed like Charlie was always in some sort of a controversy with folks one way or the other, but I think he outfoxed him at every turn, and he was fun to work with. And sort of the polar opposite of him would be Jim Buck, who is the long-term mayor of Granville, and a great tennis player, by the way. and Jim was a character as well, a totally different sort of a person from a very different sort of community, but they both had qualities that really transcended the position, I think, and were able to bring their own particular style, totally different, but their own particular style to the community, and I think ultimately both communities were really well served by them.
One thing I've learned in my time is local officials really do represent the people who live in that community. I mean, Charlie Burton's a blue collar town and bootstrap kind of a place, and Charlie's that kind of a mayor. Just sort of figured it out as he goes along, and really had the best interests of his citizens at heart, and just did things his own way. And then you go the other side of the state, and Granville is sort of a conservative place where they're straight shooters, and here's Jim Buck, the biggest gentleman of all time, who's sort of there as the broker of deals and the keeper of good out in Granville. And with both of them, spent a lot of time serving their communities, and they serve them well. And you see that all across the state, where folks just, you come off the street, you're making $5 a meeting, you're knocking on doors telling people to vote for you. They find somebody who kind of looks like them and works like them and talks like them, and it matters. It's a really great quilt when you see it all together at somewhere like the league.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is one of the reasons that I have been extremely fortunate to work for the league for a long, long time. It's the people. At the end of the day, it really is the people. I mean, the job was good, but the people within the municipal league and the officials that I got to work with, both the elected and a lot of the managers as well, really, and the attorneys, of course, just make it a huge difference.
Yeah. Speaking of attorneys, how about legal cases? I've always said one of the things that this organization does amazingly well that we've never done a great job telling people about is our legal defense fund and all the work that we do on behalf of communities and getting into cases at the appellate levels, at the Supreme Court levels, sometimes even federally, jumping into situations there. Something stand out to you in your time here? We've been involved in a lot of cases, had a lot of wins, had a few losses, but something you sort of put your finger on and say that one was a special one for you or for the organization or for our members?
I think the one that pops up is the recent, relatively recent Michigan Supreme Court decision in the Lansing prevailing wage case, which since we don't have another hour for me to try to explain it, I'll try to be more succinct than I normally am. And basically what it did was it reversed a previous decision of the Michigan Supreme Court that had been decades previous. The Supreme Court had ruled that a prevailing wage ordinance in the city of Detroit was unconstitutional. Well, in this case, for Lansing, because of new language in the state constitution that was put in 1963, the court went the other way, and they made a very strong statement with respect to the authority of local governments to put in place the sort of local laws, ordinances, that the electorate wanted. And they said that is the purview of the locality. And it was a strong statement. Now, there are going to be different cases and different facts, and they'll go a different way in the future. In fact, the legislature's already tried to do that for them. But still, it's language that I hope that my successor and others will be able to use to help municipalities for decades to come.
And that's one of the reasons we have a difficult time bragging about that stuff. It's difficult stuff to figure out, but right. It is so important. And oftentimes more important than the laws that are actually passed, because oftentimes, as you know, when they're passed, they're a mess. And it's at some point, it's going to wind up in the court. And the court's got to sort of figure out what it all means. And that's where you and your colleagues have just done a fantastic bit of work throughout the years. How about the municipal attorney? Does he or she look different than they did 40 years ago? Is it a similar type of occupation, same types of folks, different types of folks?
The municipal attorneys, I would say that has been a very stable profession, in the sense that you still get long-term, very qualified and long-term persons who are in a lot of those positions. They have lost resources for the most part, so it's a tougher job, I know that. But fortunately for municipalities, the men and women who are either in-house or not in-house as city or village attorneys, it's a calling for them, frankly. Mm-hmm. And they have to know a lot of law. People don't realize that municipal law is incredibly broad. So you have to be a Jack or Jill of a great many different legal trades, if you will. And the folks that go into it tend to stay there, and they have amazing expertise. It's really good. And one of the gratifying things that's happening now is that I think our municipal attorneys group is being really helpful to the League's Lansing office on a number of issues and pieces of legislation, and that's great.
Fantastic. So we're going to end up here with a little word association. Some of the bigger personalities and folks whose names many people listening to the podcast are going to recognize here. I'll give you a name, and you tell me the first thing that comes to your mind.
All right.
You mentioned before Coleman Young.
The time when he was in an elevator with my father, who didn't work for the Municipal League, in a different context, and in the elevator as well were some of the heavyweights from the captains of industry in Detroit. Coleman said to the group, well, I better keep my back to the wall with you guys in here. That was the sort of guy he was. He had a very different sort of sense of humor, I guess, and was unafraid to say whatever to whomever.
How about the longtime Livonia mayor, then county executive, and one-time board president, Ed McNamara?
I didn't know Ed too well, but you just got the sense, I had the sense, that he was the Richard Daley of Southeast Michigan.
Dennis Archer.
Dennis Archer was, he was a precursor to Barack Obama. A very bright, well-spoken, sophisticated person of color who made it to his level, but obviously Barack Obama went on to be the president of the United States, but I think there were similarities.
Bill Milliken, former governor.
Oh, it makes me emotional. A paragon of Michigan governance, just a intelligent, kind, effective, I think, during his term, person, just a great human being.
Jim Blanchard.
Jim Blanchard was a very effective, I thought, very effective governor who kept saying jobs, jobs, jobs. So, and he was correct. That was his message. He was on that very early, jobs, jobs, jobs. Unfortunately, I have the feeling that maybe the last run was maybe one that he wasn't fully committed to, and it didn't work out.
John Engler.
John Engler was an enigma to me. I had three or four interactions with him, including the time that he showed up for lunch at our board of directors meeting, and basically undressed the entire board of directors. There's a lot of silence.
As only he could do.
Yes.
As only he could do.
A lot of silence.
Happened to a lot of folks.
A lot of silence in that room that day. By the same token, he obviously could be amazingly effective. People underestimated him, I think, for a while, and then they realized that he not only knew how to use every mechanism of state government, but was generally more knowledgeable and probably brighter than others. And so he got stuff done. Whether you liked the way he did it or not is another question. I talked to him once while he was still governor about something, and he was very open and thoughtful in what we were talking about. I think it was roads or something like that. And then I saw him after he had left at a conference, and I mean, this is years and years later down in D.C. And it was amazing. I came up to him and he remembered my name, yeah. Which he was still a politician. I mean,
right.
We had very little interaction, and he remembered my name, and we had a nice conversation about the future of Michigan local government and what role townships should play in local governments in Michigan. And his response was kind of surprising, given the fact that he was from a rural area.
Yeah. So, Jennifer Granholm.
Jennifer Granholm probably got a bad rap because she was trying to deal with the legislature for the most part. I guess it was split for the first 2 years, and then it was the Republican Party controlled after. Mm-hmm. So the question is, did she get as much done as she should have or could have? And, you know, I think she was dealing with a very difficult legislature that was effective and frustrating what she wanted to do. And so it's too bad.
John Dingell.
John Dingell, well, sort of like Mayor Daley at the federal level, maybe. I have a very positive recollection of him because he was very open and kind to us whenever we would go into Washington, D.C., and it was always sincere, I thought. And obviously he knew everything and how to control what he did in Congress. I'm sure some people didn't like the way he did things, but for Michigan, I think he did it well. I think he was a net positive for Michigan. And I remember once we were talking, and I referred to Michigan as being one of the Rust Belt states, and I didn't mean it in a negative way. I was trying to say that that's a mischaracterization, but he leaned over and said, no, don't ever use that phrase. And then we went on. It's a nice moment. Good guy, I think.
And Carl Levin.
Oh, Carl Levin was as open and kind to us whenever we were down there as anyone could have been. He always had all of his principal staff persons, and incredibly bright and thoughtful and effective is my impression. And he played against character very well. And in terms of, he was not a movie star, didn't have movie star looks. But he made it work for
disheveled hair.
Yep.
Disheveled tie.
Yep.
Made suit that didn't fit him.
Yep. Made it work perfectly. Made it work perfectly. And I do recall the time when he helped me out personally, at least this way I take it. I had spent, you know, a lot of time putting together our little booklet of stuff that we were presenting and talking about, and it was very thick and weighty and important. And he picked it up and kind of looked at it a little bit and then just tossed it on the table in sort of a dismissive way. And the point was, don't bring me like dozens of pages of whatever. Yeah. Tell me succinctly what you need, and maybe we can do something for you. It was an interesting message. A much different approach than Spencer Abraham, Senator Abraham, used in one of those episodes when we met with him. And Kerry Guido actually got us the entree into Abraham's.
The late Mayor Guido, yep, of Dearborn's wife, Kerry.
Yep, who apparently had been early on a big supporter, right, of Spence.
Right.
And so she actually had a private meeting with him, and then Mayor Guido and I and Kerry went in, and a bunch of Senator Abraham's staff. And as you know, Senator Abraham was noted for being very bright and a bit testy. And on that particular morning, apparently his twins had been, as he put it, very willful. So I think he'd had a tough day already by the time he got there. And he came in, and I had once again done this fabulous book of stuff and physicians. And he opened it up and he looked at it and just said, "Who wrote this? Who did this?" And I almost lost control of my bodily functions, literally. And it proceeded from there to go downhill. And yeah, you know you're in trouble when everybody is looking down at the table, all of his staff, no one is doing any eye contact with anyone. But the senator made it clear that he didn't agree with, yes, the positions espoused by the municipal league. I, yes, of course, being
the dutiful soldier that you are.
Yes, and the, you know, the stalwart person I am, I immediately threw the National League of Cities under the bus, yes, and said it was all their stuff.
So. Exactly. When in doubt. Yes, and then he probably went on to hammer you about the camera angles, too. I remember he was obsessed with camera angles.
Really?
Yes,
yeah,
whenever we took pictures of him. He didn't like his chin. You couldn't take anything from underneath. It was a very interesting thing. He'd stop a meeting with 100 people there and start going off. It was a crazy thing. But well, Bill, it's been a fabulous career for you. It's been a very important career for you on behalf of communities all around Michigan. I would say everybody who lives in those communities or lives anywhere in Michigan, it's 40 years of trying to make this place better in the communities that we live in. We believe, obviously, around here, the better communities make a better Michigan. I think your work embodies that as well as anyone. So thanks for the work you've done, and best of luck to you as you move into retirement. And I know you'll be hanging around a little bit helping us on a few things, but retirement is something well earned on your behalf. So thanks for joining us on the podcast today, and good luck to you in the future.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you and have more for you next time on the Economics of Place podcast.
This has been a production of the Michigan Municipal League. For more information on our programs and services, please visit www.mml.org and join us for the next episode of We Love Where You Live.